What's up, guys? Got Dylan Morgan today, and I'm gonna tell you real quick what I love about this conversation. He is super practical and loves leveraging technology, and he's all about differentiation. So we have a really great chat when it comes to marketing differentiation, what hasn't worked and what has worked, one of which you might be surprised by. So there's one in there, there's a gem in there that everyone is skeptical of that actually helped him get his start. So you'll want to listen to find out about that. But I will say he really just pragmatically thinks about the numbers and what works and tracks it and keeps doing things that work. And I really appreciate that about him. So we talk a little bit about new builds, going client direct, industry dynamics, a lot of fun stuff in there. So hope you enjoy the conversation with Dylan Morgan.
All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome. We got Dylan Morgan. Welcome, brother. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Even though we're both a little banged up, you were just telling me you got a little sinus thing going on, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been getting after me, starting like late last week. So I don't know. I hope it passes. I got a snowboard trip coming up.
Ooh, where to?
Just going to snowshoe. Well, I'm on the East Coast, so like that's pretty much the best we have within driving distance of Virginia. So I did finally go out west back in December, and that was a blast. But this trip is a little more low key.
That's what I was going to ask you. Where did you go in December?
Snowbird in Utah.
Oh, how was it?
Oh, dude, it was great. That's the first time I've been out there. And like, I just always hear all these West Coast people talk about how great the snow is, how it's just the powder. And I'm like, yeah. I went out there and it is like, it's just a totally different experience. It's a little icy over here. I mean, I still like snowshoe or I like what we got over here because like, that's what I learned on. But that powder was something else. I'm definitely going back.
Yeah. What about Colorado? You going to hit up a Colorado mountain next time, you think?
Probably go somewhere different, but yeah. So like maybe Colorado.
Cool. Right on. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a group of guys. It sounds like we're all like dead set. Like this is going to be a yearly thing now. So
I'm a big fan of setting precedents for guys' trips, especially in 30s, 40s, 50s, however old you are. I'm working 30. On that myself with my wife. I'm saying, oh, yeah, we do this every year. And she's like, no, you haven't. I'm like, well, we're starting to. It's the new precedents.
Yeah. If especially like the longer you can keep the ritual going. I actually almost didn't go this year. Mm-hmm. And my wife was like, what are you doing?
Go.
I was like, oh, no, I feel like it's not responsible this year. She's like, go on the trip. And I'm glad I did. So
that's awesome, man. Definitely hit us up if you come out this way. Love to have you at the office.
You're in Colorado, aren't you?
Yep. Yeah, we're in Denver. So, you know, a lot of times people fly into DIA and on their way to the mountains, our office isn't far out of the way. So
well, I'm definitely coming back.
Yeah. Cool. And I'm banged up, man. I pulled my back out shoveling snow. So that tells you what Colorado's been doing. We got a bunch of snow over the weekend and I literally pulled a lower back muscle. So I've been banged up.
Always those mundane tasks you got to watch out for.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, to business. Let's give everyone listening a little bit of your background and kind of how you got here, kind of how long you've been in the business, what you were doing in prior lives. Because I think it's always fascinating how everyone got to the home inspection world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, give us a little insight into kind of where you've been and what you've done.
So I came into it from the business side. White collar business, didn't have any contracting experience or construction experience, anything like that. I was working for a corporate cog in the wheel, and that just wasn't really for me.
What were you doing?
I was doing like market research. I mean, I'll main drop, like, I don't care. I was working for CoStar. I feel like a lot of people might actually be familiar with them because they're kind of in the real estate realm.
Right.
They're a big data provider, especially for guys on the commercial side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were a lot of good things about that company that attracted me to it, but the culture was not a good fit for me. Mm-hmm. Over the time I was there. I was there for almost 3 years. I kind of overstayed my welcome, I think. I'll just be straightforward, you know, I just see one thing led to another. I ended up having a bad conversation with a broker. Like, we just caught each other in bad moods, I guess. And I got canned, man, out the door. And like, I was a high performer and everything too. Like, I was like, I can't believe they like kicked me out the door over that.
Over a bad day. Right. Yeah. A bad conversation.
And it's funny because I kind of like fired myself because I told on myself. Like, I went to my manager. I was like, dude, I was like, this conversation didn't go too well. And it wasn't that bad. Like, it's not like we were cursing at each other or anything. We were just
Right.
like kind of just being snarky. But
Yeah. So that was
that's
it.
what happens. That's what happens when you cop an attitude with like a big wig, a New York broker. There's
Oh,
like,
okay. Yeah, maybe that changes things. Yeah, if it's a big time client.
yeah, anyways, I should have left long before then. I wasn't happy doing it, and I was just kind of sticking it out because they paid well and I hadn't found anything better yet. And I had been talking about starting my own business since I was in college. Like, it
Yeah.
had been like 5 years at that point. I was still talking about it. So I guess the funny thing about it is once I got kicked out of the nest, I was like, I got no opportunity cost now. Like, this is the time. Let's just do it. The amount of time I'll spend like submitting job applications into black holes for positions that don't actually exist, I might as well just create my own job opportunity. So here we are.
So, like, why home inspections? Was it, did you have some exposure to it in the previous job, or like, what was the, how'd you learn about business?
I was considering a couple different options. Home inspection was on the radar because, along with some other things on the list, like maybe become a real estate agent or even like going into appraisal, I wanted something that I could start with the resources I already had. I had like been saving my butt off when I worked at that company, so I had a pretty nice stash of cash to lean into, but it wasn't enough that I was going to go start some like big manufacturing business or something like that. So I needed something service-based, low cost of capital to get in, that I could just build from nothing. And I didn't I was real a real estate agent really would have been a more natural transition for me, especially because I was pretty well networked in my area. I could have become a commercial broker, especially given coming from where I was working. But I just have always had reservations about where the real estate agent profession is headed.
Ooh.
I just feel like they're under threat from tech, and I don't think that threat's going anywhere. I felt that way for years. And so I just didn't want to, like, I mean, maybe I was thinking a little too long term, but I was like, I just don't want to like spend a career building something up that just gets wiped out by technology.
That's
So,
fascinating that you had that thought. What year was that?
well, when I was making this decision, that was 2020, right before the world shut down for COVID. But I just don't feel like, I mean, I could be wrong, but to me, like, home inspectors, I think just are a bit more insulated from that. There's just aspects of our job that I think are going to be very difficult to automate away. So,
Did you feel a little like a prophet when the NAR suit stuff happened? When you were like, because you, if you had that thought 3 to 4 years ago, and then the realtor's role is kind of coming into focus and question as a result of this NAR suit, very interesting. You had some foresight there.
I am not. I want to disclaim that I'm not well educated on that whole topic. But I do have like my sixth sense about it, understanding like the basis of the lawsuit. You know, they kind of attacked how commissions are done. And to me, it kind of feels like there's a bigger game at play with NAR. Like, that feels like to me they just went for what they knew would stick. More so than that, that's actually the long game with NAR. And like I said, that's my opinion. I could be totally wrong, but
Do
to
you
me,
say
I'm just
more? Can you say more about that? Like, more of what you mean?
like, of all the things to go after him for, we want to nitpick that I guess that the sellers, that property owners are being forced to pay commission to the buyer's agent. The buyer's agents are going to have to be compensated one way or another.
Right.
All of this stuff, if you know, through the rules of economics, people are going to get paid one way or another, or they're not going to exist, which I suppose is an option too. But it's like another way of looking at it is that the fee to the buyer's agent is like an advertising fee, because that buyer's agent ultimately brought a customer to the table that could purchase the house. And I suppose the listing agent is kind of doing the same thing. And so it ends up being a cooperation between the two of them. I don't see it so much that the sellers are forced to pay an adversarial party. If the sellers aren't going to pay it, then the buyers are going to pay it. And so the market's going to have to work out how that's going to happen. But to me, what difference does it make? In the grand scheme of things, I think the whole lawsuit, it's very interesting and I'm watching it. I just think that it's a very a very small piece of a big problem when it comes to our housing situation.
Yeah, definitely one piece of a larger problem if you want to talk, you know, get into like inventory and availability of housing. But yeah, I think the theory is that the buyer's agents are no longer actually the ones bringing the buyer to the transaction, that like technology, to your point, is what brought the buyer, Zillow, because of access to information online. But I think regardless, your point is well thought out of, it's hard to ever replace inspectors because there's physical inspection happening. So AI, I'm not extremely bullish on AI, you know, replacing inspectors or technology replacing someone putting their hands on a water heater.
Yeah, I was, I'm real excited about that. I like tech. Anytime something new comes out, like I'm thinking about how could I apply it, right? But, and I've had a ChatGPT subscription since you could get it.
Nice.
And I probably spent a couple $100 on that over the course of a year and a half or something. And I don't use it a lot. Now that's probably, that's not to say that it doesn't have more potential. It's just that
Sure.
I have not been able to regularly apply it. Every once in a while, I'll use it. If I happen to think of it, I might go to it to see what kind of comment it'll write for me about something. But yeah, I just don't, it's not, I think it'll be used a lot more by us. And I think it's going to be able to do more for us in time, but I don't see it replacing us. And I think that's going to be the case for a lot of professions. It's maybe going to, maybe it might replace some level one tasks in any given job. You know, for an attorney, it might be having the AI go, you know, look back through case law and find examples they can use to support whatever case they're making. Because that's a tedious task that no one really wants to do anyways, just flipping through books basically, or searching through archives. As far as actually putting the case together, I don't, an attorney, someone that has learned and practiced law, is still going to have to proofread at a minimum these things. So
do you foresee any use cases for home inspectors, since you have, you know, played with it a little bit, thought about it, in terms of those level one tasks?
Potentially, even though I so far have really failed to find a way to use it effectively. Like, I haven't found a way to bake it into my systems and processes to where it's useful every day. I'm just still just experimenting with it. But I've asked it to do some things, but I'd be just being honest. While at first I was fascinated by it, I've been kind of disappointed by it as the excitement faded. Where it's like, you know, for example, one of the things I really thought it would be able to do for me is like help with, be a bit more help with like marketing tasks.
Okay.
But, and maybe it's user error. Maybe I just don't know how to build good prompts, but I'll ask it to do some things for me for marketing. And it just feels like it's regurgitating like boilerplate marketing tactics to me. I'm like, I know that. Like, I learned that in marketing 101, and it's not going to get me any business, right? So that's probably more than a level one task that I'm asking from it. What it could probably do is write some ad copy for me, but even that might not be effective. So it's just, I haven't really been able to get much from it that's of real value. I think the most it's been able to do for me is just write a narrative I was too lazy to write myself.
Right.
That's the best I've gotten out of it, really. Oh, you know what? I'll tell you the best I've gotten out of it. I have a buyer's guide that I wrote as like a marketing piece, a long form marketing piece. It'll pop up if you're on my website for more than like, oh, what is it, 30 seconds or 90 seconds, it'll pop up and you can download it. I think it's around 12 or 13 pages. And I wrote the whole thing, but the way I write is like boring and dry. Like, I would have a hard time reading my own writing and not daydreaming. So I took all of it and I plugged it into ChatGPT and I said, rewrite this in a way that's engaging and like condense it down and like make it not boring, whatever I told it. And it did, it rewrote the whole thing, got rid of quite a bit of fluff I didn't even realize was in there, and was written in a lot, in a way that was a lot easier to read. It wasn't so dense. I went through and made a couple tweaks to it afterward, but it did, like, it probably saved me a few hours of work, or did something I wasn't even capable of doing, because maybe I'm just a boring writer.
That, you know? Well, I wasn't gonna say that, but I was gonna say most of us are boring writers, and we write in a way that we think people want to hear, but it's not conversational. So I think that it might be the best use case right there. Is like any copy for a website, inspectors should probably think about trying to run that through to see if they can make it more fun and relatable to the average home buyer.
Yeah, I think another time I've used it. It's funny because I started off kind of negative about ChatGPT. Edit this out. I started off kind of negative about ChatGPT, but I'm remembering some cases where it's been useful. I've used it to write some of my email automations
that are inspectable.
Again, I've tweaked them, but I think one of the hardest things to do is to write an email to your clients that is brief enough that they'll actually read it, but long enough that it accomplishes its goal. And so I've done a lot of experimenting around with that. And I have at times used ChatGPT to try to write effective emails for me, especially if I'm trying to get there to, like, let's say I'm trying to sell them a preventative maintenance inspection, which I've sold like two of the whole time I've been in business. But you put it in there, like, write some, you know, copy for me for an email campaign to convince prior clients to get a preventative maintenance inspection, whatever. And you can use some of these data points that I already found for you, whatever. So I've done that too.
I like that. And that's something we're honestly weighing the pros and cons of, or the, I guess, the opportunity cost of baking in ourselves, where it's like a button within the interface that helps you guys with your creative process to move a little quicker. So let's pivot off that, because I do think we could have a whole session on that, which maybe we should in terms of use cases there. But I think you already gave us some really good ones in terms of rewriting what you've already written. I think that's the misconception or misperception of it, right? Is that it'll do all the work for you versus refine what you've already done. I think that's what some people think, it's the magic easy button versus, hey, tweak this and make it more fun. But let's go back to COVID and after. And so you got in the industry. When did you kind of like start your business? What month, what year was that? I'm fascinated with like the startup story as well.
I committed to starting the business in December of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I started taking the steps necessary going into the new year. So lost my job in like October 19. Took like 2 months off to do some soul searching, figure out what I wanted. Ended up talking to, I think you've actually talked to this guy, Floyd Gibbs.
Oh, he's been on the podcast for sure.
Yeah, he has. So they are family friends of my wife's family.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And so I actually, you know, I went and sat down with him at one point and grilled him, asked him some questions when I was just trying to feel out like the market dynamics, like how does the home inspection business really work? And that conversation was around the holidays, sometime in December, I think. And then by February, I launched pretty fast compared to the expectations that were set. Once I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So I started beginning of January. By February, sometime in February, I was licensed, insured, and InterNACHI certified and ready to go.
Just in time for the world to shut down in March.
Yeah, it's like ingrained in my mind. I was sitting there on the TV watching our governor like shut down the state. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, what have I done? I have the worst timing in history to start a business.
You almost to a T. Yeah, timed that. But what happened? Like, what was going through your head? Kind of, did you start? Yeah, what was going through your head at that time?
Well, once I got past the shock of, I have the worst timing ever, I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, I'm committed to this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see it through. So like, how am I going to work through it? But you know, I really felt like it really didn't have, I think that the impact that COVID has had on the home inspection business has hit harder in the last like year or 2 years than it did in the early stages. I don't think it really had a negative impact. In fact, it might've even been a bit of a boost for home inspection businesses at first when the market really heated up, but now we're paying the price.
I think that's a great point. I think that's not talked about, and I haven't heard it said in that way, where outside of the first 2 weeks to a month, right,
certain places completely shut down for a couple weeks to
Yeah,
months.
you can see that blip in the charts.
But I think the slingshot out of that, you're right, benefited the industry as a whole like tenfold. But the payback, the give back now of rates spiking, you're right. It's like a slow kind of bleed, unfortunately, which is painful for all of us because it's like this slow moving train. That's
yeah, it's been tough. Like, and I have no, you know, I want to have those conversations. I don't mind saying that it's been a tough ride. You know, I know there's plenty of home inspectors out there that can relate to it. There's probably some out there that don't. I'd love to know what their secret is, but, you know, the last, I mean, I'll speak from my area. So I'm in Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And, if you just look at like I was just looking at Redfin data earlier. I really seem to like Redfin's data, so I'm like always on there.
They do really well with their data. Yeah.
And if you consider that like most home inspections outside of the occasional curious homeowner or like new construction related jobs, it's all transaction driven. So transactions in Richmond are at 52% of the volume that they were in 2021. This time of year. And it's been a steady trend downward. We're about, according to Redfin's data right now, we're about break even with the number of transactions we did in February 2023. But either way, I mean, we have not, and 23 was the hardest hit from like 22 was below 21, 23 was like 40% below. And yeah, I definitely feel that. So, you know, I'm obviously still trying to market my way through it and like try to gain market share. But it's hard when, I mean, any business, regardless of what industry you're in, if you're facing 50% demand destruction,
what do you
that's
do?
A tough pill. So,
yeah, I mean, so let's jump into the marketing. Cause I know you're, you know, when you were presented to me, they were like, he's doing some really cool stuff, good marketing brain, good business brain. So like what one, when the slowdown happened, how did you think about it from like, I got to start doing X when it comes to like marketing?
You know, I'll start this off with saying I don't know that I've handled it perfectly. I've just made the best decisions I could with the information I had at the time. But I'd say it started early for me. I think one of the things that I'm really grateful I did was when I was really busy in like 21. I mean, because it really wasn't that long after I got into business that I was doing like 30 to 35 inspections a month. And I was making quite a bit of money during that time, and I was just hoarding it, just save, because I was just obsessed with this idea. I was like, I want a 6-month cash reserve in my business, and so I want to be able to pay my salary plus, and my salary is conservative. It's not like the amount I can make in the best month ever, but so I want to be able to pay my salary and all the business bills for 6 months if I didn't do another inspection for that period.
Beautiful mentality, by the way. I don't think that is standard or the majority thought of new inspectors. So that to me is a huge takeaway for any new inspector, first year inspector, good rule of thumb.
It's hard though. It's hard. One, you have to actually generate the business, the income to begin with, which is the hardest part.
The hardest part. Yeah.
But then you're looking at, there's so much temptation because then it's, maybe I should reinvest this money into more marketing and advertising, which actually probably would not be a bad use for it if you're effective in how you're spending that money. But then it's a lot of inspectors be like, oh, well, I should upgrade my tools and equipment, which I appreciate a good tool, but you have to remember your consumers don't care.
Right.
You should have good equipment, but whether your camera, if your thermal camera was $700 or $15,000, it's not going to make a dollar difference in what you can charge. At least I don't think.
Yeah, as a consumer and former agent, we don't know the difference.
Yeah. And then if you haven't done that, if you haven't spent the money on those things, then it's, oh, well, I could take it home. Yeah, I'd really have to get that boat or a new car. Or I need a new truck. That's what I'm doing, all this business. I'm driving all over the place. I need a reliable vehicle. So I'm going to go buy a brand new $70,000 truck, you know? And it's like, you got to fend all that off and just say, no, no, no. Like, I need this cash because I don't know that the business I have today is still going to be like this in the future. Like, there's always that level of uncertainty. And it happened. And so but having that cash, I think, really helped from a, it doesn't make me bulletproof, but it does make you a little more patient. You can continue to be more long-term focused. and not like panic and not like go get a second job and waste your time, you know, working for someone else instead of building your business. It just helps to keep you out of that survival mode for at least a little bit longer. It buys you time.
For sure.
I think it just, the mentality difference it makes for you is huge. So anyways, I want to get off the cash tangent. When I did start to feel the slowdown, it didn't happen overnight, but you could see it in the, it's like my, I hate looking at this chart actually in the Spectorometrics. It like really aggravates me watching my trend downward over the
shouldn't
last
slope year. That way. Yeah. I don't like any of these
no.
slopes.
The charts need to go up and to the right always, but they've been down and to the right for a while. So yeah, it's been rocky coming back down, but you know, I kind of dialed in my business around more conservative metrics. Like I said earlier, it's pretty conservative salary, enough that me and my wife there, that I can contribute comfortably to our household.
Sure.
Not the money I want to be bringing home, but it's enough. So basically I can pay, you know, my business can get by on like 20 inspections a month, mm-hmm. which I look at as like a half full calendar. So, and I could get by on less if I really had to. But, so that's part of it. It's more of like, I guess instead of shifting into like rapid expansion and growth, 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 I pulled back a little bit, looked more like resiliency. Other things I did is like, you know, I tried different things with marketing. But when I started to get real busy, I pulled back on things that I just thought were suboptimal in the long run, such as, Home Advisor. I did Home Advisor leads for a little while when I was first getting started. I pretty much did anything. I'd try anything. I just wanted to experiment
yeah.
and figure out what worked for me. So I did Angie's List, Home Advisor, Thumbtack, Yelp, real estate offices, everything, anything and everything. I tried it.
So out of those, I love this topic, by the way, because folks that have had success with those often don't talk about it. It's the loudest ones that, you know, have gone through leads and not gotten any business that want to talk about it. Out of all of those, what were a couple of the ones that actually had good ROI, positive ROI?
Well, and I'm going to continue to be candid here. In the beginning, like Home Advisor, I hope I never have to go back to that, but it served a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not necessarily recommending it to anyone else. I'm just saying that for some people, it might make sense for whatever position they're in. And like at the time that I was trying them out, one, like I said, I wanted to try everything for myself and figure out what worked for me. And, you know, if you go on like the InterNACHI forums, most inspectors will tell you to steer clear. In fact, you'll probably find me in there recommending you find another way. But that them saying you can't make money doing it isn't true. You've just got to play that game. And that game is brutal. It's a dogfight. Home Advisor, in my experience, is based on who can dial the number the fastest when that lead comes in. And also it can be a bit of a price game. So when you're on Home Advisor, you're not your own brand. You're just another contractor on the list. You're just another random phone call. And they're also going to be annoyed because they've probably gotten three calls already from people they weren't expecting to hear from. All right. So like, you're not going to have much brand identity. You're not going to have a lot of pricing power, and you're really not special. It's just and the thing is, when you're busy, it's really hard. It's so hard to call a lead right away. It was one of the most disruptive times of my life. At that time, it was before I had help. Like, I have someone that handles my calls for me now, but at that time, I was like, I always answer the phone, and I, regardless whatever's going on, I call the lead. And I was like hardcore about it. I bought an Apple Watch. I liked to go down to the river in the summertime. I love hanging out at the river. Cell phones and rivers don't get along too well. So I bought an Apple Watch and got cellular service for it. And I took sales calls in the river while swimming. That happened more than one time, or in the kayak or whatever it was I was doing. I took sales calls in the shower. And my wife started to hate my phone and my Apple Watch because I would leave the dinner table. And like those things are not good, but you know, at that time it was just, I was going to do anything, whatever it took to drive business. That's the kind of life you're going to have if you're going to be dependent on those kinds of leads in the long run, though. It's either that, or you've got to develop a system and have other people that can answer those calls or chase those leads for you. I was unable to find a reasonable solution for that. I tried. I tried seeing if call centers would do it. I just couldn't find a good fit for him. So, but it's hard on you to handle those like that.
I can appreciate the perspective though of like the trade-offs, right? Like you're playing that game, know the game you're playing. And if it's a race to getting 50 jobs, 20 jobs, meeting 20 agents, know what you're signing up for essentially.
I mean, when you're trying to get your revenue from zero to something, it just, sometimes that's what you're willing to do. I was willing to do it for a period of time and I'm not willing to do it anymore. And I hope that I don't get so desperate that I have to again.
Did you meet some decent agents from it?
Oh yeah. So that's the, see, I'm getting tied down a little too much in the details on that. The bigger picture with it was that you also have to remember with any paid marketing, sometimes your return is a little longer time horizon than the job you got from it. And so, you know, with Home Advisor, it's not just that one client. So let's say you spent, let's say in 1 month, you spent $1,000 on Home Advisor leads and you got $2,000 worth of work. That's not a good return on your advertising dollars, if that's the way you want to look at it, especially for the heartache. And it might not be worth it. But also remember that on those $2,000 worth of jobs, let's say that was four or five inspections. If you met three agents on those jobs and one of those agents decided they liked you for whatever reason, your personality, your ability to do your job, the color of the shirt you were wearing, and they refer you six deals a year, let's say that's $25 to $3,000 worth of work. All that, you would have never met that agent if it weren't for that original lead. So it's just something to consider. Sometimes your payoff with that gets into a part of advertising that I still struggle with. It's attribution. You know, who, what part of my marketing gets credit for what? You have to understand those extra layers of it to really understand that, you know, if your advertising and marketing is paying off.
You know, it's funny you say that. Like, I think I woke up early this morning because of the very concept of attribution. Like, we struggle with it at Spectora. Yeah. It's kind of like, is this spend worth it? And so, there is a art and a science piece to, I think, marketing spend. And there is some gut feel and a few data points that you almost have to rely on to say, okay, I'm pretty sure I got that agent through that, or that inspector came through this channel. We'll keep doing that, but not pressing it so much to where you're blowing your whole marketing budget.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be very tough. I think one of the avenues I struggle with the most is trying to figure out who came from a Google ad. That one is so challenging.
It's so difficult.
Especially when you're trying to ask your customer, because they don't always understand the difference. They don't know that the thing they clicked on at the top that said ad was a Google ad, or if it was just organic search. And that one drives me insane sometimes trying to figure it out. But so I don't do any of the paid lead sites anymore.
Okay. So you stopped that. You got to a kind of a cruising altitude in terms of referring agents, right? You got to a point of feeling pretty good about your recurring business. Yeah.
In the beginning. Yeah. So I guess the first shift there was I got away from the paid lead sites. Another thing I'd like to mention about that is just remember that like sites like Home Advisor and Angi, a lot of what they're doing is they're buying Google ads and then just recycling that lead to you. So like I compete with them now, right? I go my Google ads, like analytics and stuff, Angie's List and Home Advisor always in there, right? I'm fighting for ad space with them now. So anyways, once I started getting some momentum built up, with the agents, I did pull off of those paid lead gen sites and started to kind of coast off of the referrals I was getting. And I also leaned into that for a while. And I, you know, I got some traction with some of those agents or brokers, and I would, you know, I'd blow on those embers, right? There was already a fire starting, and I just stoked it a little bit. And so like, there was one office that seemed to be kind of gung-ho about me. I did a couple presentations there, and I got a lot of their agents were using me for a while. And so I would say most of my business started coming from agent referrals at that point. Now, if you fast forward to today, I've actually moved away from that model too. And this would probably be interesting for us to talk about, because I do think it's a little more controversial. And I'm not even going to argue that what I'm doing is the healthiest thing for my business. I don't know how it's going to work. It was just one of those decisions that kind of that was I struggled with for a long time. It just a feeling I had in my gut, and that I just kind of committed to it as like a for better or for worse, this is the direction I'm going. And once I had that resolve, it got easier to quit straddling the fence and just commit to it. And I believe that in any profession, there's good apples, there's bad apples. So I have a lot of great agents that are great people that I love working with. However, I have observed some market dynamics, at least in my area, that are a bit disturbing to me. And I don't think they're good for our profession. And so in order, the only way I really feel like I can break away from it is to stop soliciting work from agents. Now, agents that continue to work with me are working with me because they like what I sell. And that's always a good thing. But I'm not going to offices anymore. I'm not calling agents. I'm not, giving them the spiel, the kiss the ring mentality of, I'm not going to kill your deal. I have soft skills, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I've got that. That's fine. But dude, there is so much emphasis on these. At the end of the day, these are superficial details. I'm not saying they're not important, but I'm saying they're not the most important, but they're being prioritized as though they are. And so we're just getting a ton of people that are great, smooth talkers. We still need people with the hard skills and the backbone and the diligence and the thoroughness, all the things that we say are we can't sell. They are hard to sell to the consumer. But I just in times where I've been able to compare and I've seen reports done on houses, I have a specific example. But there's more than one. The one coming to mind, the client wasn't happy with the inspection he got. He looked through the report. He was like, it's just full of a bunch of disclaimers. There's nothing of substance in here. I went back behind. I never saw that. I didn't see that report beforehand. I went back behind that inspector and reinspected the house. My report had like 40% more comments in it, a couple of which were quite substantial, including some structural issues with it. Objectively, between the two reports, mine was better, significantly better. And this doesn't always mean anything, but my time on site for that house was almost 3 hours. The other guy, hour 45 minutes. Again, that doesn't always mean something, but in this case, I think it did. I charged more, which could be a tough sell, right? Because this goes into like getting commoditized, right? People think they're buying the same thing, but you've got to, it is hard to sell it, but you've got to convince them we're not the same. But anyways, one of the most disturbing things about that whole deal was that I actually ended up getting like catching heat from the listing agent about how, basically my inspection was like just causing confusion. And that, I said things that the other inspector didn't, like just pitting me against the other guy and like all this stuff. And I was like, what is this? Like, I guess I'm not going to apologize for doing my job. And it's too much to go on a long tangent about, but I can tell you example after example after example of there's just a lot of Dunning-Kruger in my market. Dunning-Kruger effect, where basically, someone knows enough about something to think they're right, but they don't know enough about it to know they're wrong. And there's just way too much of that.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like you're prioritizing speaking to the home buyer more, your marketing efforts. Is that what you're saying is kind of like potentially controversial in terms of, you know what, I'm just not even going to worry about agents in terms of my marketing spend and attention?
Yeah, I've just taken the most lucrative marketing channel and thrown it in the trash. Because I'm not willing to accept the conditions it comes with anymore.
Sure.
And I don't think it's the only way to be successful. And the way I look at it is, I have a master's degree in business, and I know some people will argue that's worthless. I would have told you it was worthless after I got it originally, because I didn't get to apply it much in the job I had. I've applied it more in this business than I ever did before.
That's amazing.
And you do learn how to think critically. You know, how can I market? I don't have to do it the same way everyone else does. I just need to find my customer. And you start when you actually understand business concepts beyond what you've read on the internet, you figure out how to play that intelligently. And you don't have to play it the same way as everyone else. In fact, being contrarian sometimes can be better. And I mean, I think y'all get that. Like, you're in a game where home inspectors think that paying 50 more than 50 cents for software is too much, you know, and right. But they miss the big picture. Like, right. I don't think your software is cheap compared to other options, but it delivers the most value, at least in my opinion.
Value for dollars. That's all we're selling, right? It's what home inspectors are selling. It's what we're selling.
Well, what I see in my market is inspectors are kind of, we don't have a lot of control over our profession. We're just kind of hung by the neck on a lot of things that we don't like doing. I'll tell you that in my market, we're like one of, I think, three markets in the United States where we're expected to give cost estimates on our reports.
Interesting.
And I do it for now. None of us like it. We all complain about it. We say we shouldn't be doing it, but we keep doing it out of fear. I'm part of the state organization for us. And, I saw some conversation between leadership there where there's two home inspectors in our area that decided they weren't going to do it anymore. And apparently they immediately got blacklisted by some brokerages in town. And the fact that a brokerage even has the influence and power to blacklist a home inspector for making a business decision to me is a huge threat. Why would I want to participate in that? You know, this is my lane. And I don't like other people stepping into my lane. And the conversations that I see the most from home inspectors, they talk more about what the agent wants than what the client needs. And I at the end of the day, I really don't care what the agent wants. I care about what's best for the client. And if I can do a couple things to make the agent's life easier, no problem. That's just professional courtesy. But I'm not going to do things that conflict with what I think the client needs to appease squeaky wheels, basically. So yeah, I've just gotten away. I just figured, you know what? I can think with a lot more clarity about building the best product I can for my customer when I don't have this noise, this chatter off to the side of me constantly having to weigh in the peanut gallery on what a good inspection looks like.
I think you're getting a lot of nods at home of anyone listening to this. But you know, the $1 million question they all have is like, well, how do I go direct to consumer? It's so hard. Like how do I even think about this?
It's very difficult. And I don't know if it's just a me problem or if it's just this industry. It is difficult to market direct to consumer. It's definitely a challenge. I will say that just based on the numbers, last data I saw, I think it came from Porch data, like 30% of, well, I think it said like 68 or 70% of consumers take their agent's referral for a home inspection.
Okay.
So part of what's making it difficult is that you're fighting for 30%.
Yeah. Yeah.
The total market. The 30% that didn't take their agent referral or didn't have an agent or whatever the case may be. So that's part of it. But I think another part of it's just trying to become not just another product on the shelf, which is very difficult. Even in this area, if you are on an agent's list, you might be one of three. And some of these people, you know, once you're just a name on a list, you've again been commoditized to where you don't stand out. I'm not price competitive. I'm not trying to make it all about price, but the bottom line is that there's always going to be plenty of people cheaper than me. If I can't make my case for why I'm the best value over the lowest price, I'm not going to win business. So I don't do well being another product on a shelf. People have to want what I sell. I guess to try to make some kind of example in another industry, like you can go to Walmart and buy a jacket for like probably 40 or 50 bucks. Or you can go to Patagonia and buy a jacket for 300. And people understand inherently there's a big difference between those coats. Now you're going to have the people that will not pay $300 or can't. That's pretty expensive. But you will have people that will because they understand the value they're buying. So they need that. I'm actually like in this specific example, like I have that coat. But like my comfort is that important. That coat keeps me warm and dry in all conditions. It's very well made. It's held up to the abuse of my work very well over the last few years. It's not a cheap coat. I know that, but I know what I bought, you know, and it's not, it's it, it, it in the sense of a home inspection, like you can get a bare minimum inspection for cheap, but that might be the most expensive inspection you buy. And that's just, that's hard to sell.
Yeah, and that's why marketing and sales exist, because you had to at some point be marketed to that those attributes of the coat are present and that it's true. And I think that's the disconnect with home inspectors, is they struggle to find the channels and the way in which to tell homeowners that they are the Patagonia coat.
Yeah, it's hard to do that. A lot of you know, consumers, limited attention spans.
Mm-hmm.
I also think consumers are just skeptical. Like anyone can claim to be the best. I've asked my web guy. I've tried to get the word "best" off my website for years because I hate it being on there. My website uses the word "best." It's for SEO purposes.
Yep.
That's the word. He's fought hard to keep that word in there, even though I've wanted to get rid of it. So my web guy won on that one. But my point with that was to say, like, I try, you know, for the consumers that I'm trying to win, I prove it to them. Not necessarily saying I'm the best, but just showing like what I've done to ensure that I'm delivering the highest quality inspection I can versus what the minimum standards are. So when home inspectors are out there saying, hire your licensed and insured home inspector, that means nothing. A license in Virginia is a joke. I got a license with like basically no training. It's all about, I mean, if you're a good test taker, you get through it. And like 25 ride-alongs is what's required in Virginia. I didn't know anything after 25 ride-alongs. I went and actually worked with Floyd's company for a little while,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I didn't really want to do because I was ready to get my own thing started, but I just needed the experience. But so like I've got a why we charge more page that shows like, so like I've done, in Virginia we're required to do 16 CEs a year. I've done about like over 800. I've got, you know, I put on there like the bare minimum tools that are required, and then the tools that I use, the number of inspections that I've done, which is, I mean, there's guys that have done more than me, but I've done about 1,000, which is more than a lot and less than some. So it's just, I try to show them through the numbers, even though not all of the service quality can be quantitative information. I do try to show them through the numbers at least a little bit. Like, this is why you're paying more.
Which is so important. And this is going to give us a good wrap up topic on differentiation, because I was going to ask you, when you're one of the three that an agent's recommending, how do you differentiate? And you kind of just answered it by having a page. Because what do customers do? They Google all three. They look at reviews. They go to each website, maybe on their phones. I love that you put those numbers on that page, because anyone that's probably price undercutting you, they've probably done a lot less inspections than you, is my guess, right? Some, maybe not. Maybe some experienced guys are too low on price, but it sounds like you give them some good numbers to back up why they're going to pay more. But yeah, I guess, how else do you think about differentiation in our industry? And what did you think of it when you got in, knowing what you know from other industries?
That was a priority for me from day one. Was not, I wanted to stand out. I wanted to have, and I'm still working on it. I'm not saying I've done perfectly with it. It's still my goal to have a product that my competitors can't easily replicate. And every day I'm trying to build that moat. It's not the easiest business to do that in. But I'm just working with you know, the limitations of my own capabilities and the resources that I have to do it. I'll actually put out there that another revelation I had once I decided that I was committed to direct to consumer was that I really saw a lot of opportunity in new construction. Because I see a lot of workmanship and quality and installation issues on new construction here. It actually happens to fit pretty well with like my gripes about the other side of the business, where I'm not wasting time putting in, you know, bullshit cost estimates, and I'm not squabbling with sellers about issues. So that it's a different game right now. I'm dealing with the builders, but when I'm dialed in, so like I'm actually shifting my product towards like the needs, the specific needs of people that bought a new house from a builder, and those needs are different. And see, I think a lot of home inspectors sell the same thing to the new construction buyers, and those buyers aren't getting the value they could be getting. Because see, I've done enough of these now that I know the games the builders play. And they're not, I'm not trashing the builders here. Maybe I shouldn't say the games they play. I know I can anticipate what they're going to do next. And I can't entirely blame them all the time. When a home inspector, I'll give you a specific example with stone veneer. All the time I see, I don't want to get too technical with it, but all the time on stone veneer, I'm seeing where they haven't fully encapsulated with mortar behind the stone, and there's gaps everywhere. You can see the lath. If a home inspector writes that there's missing or deteriorated mortar in the stone veneer, it's too vague. The builder's going to look at it and say, they're going to say something like, we built it past code, or that's a dry stack veneer. It doesn't need to have mortar in the lines. That's not what the inspector meant, but the inspector wasn't specific because he used his same canned phrase that he would have used at the time. My comments about installation issues on new construction are getting very specific, which I know is like a home inspector no-no. But if you want to go, if you're going to tell a builder he did something wrong, you have to be specific. Now, I can't use code. In Virginia, home inspectors are not allowed to say that there's a code violation, which is a bit of a challenge. It could be really time-consuming sometimes for me to go find a source other than the code to support what I'm saying. But I think in the long run, I'm doing this iteratively. Every time I do a new construction inspection, and I'm building out these comments a little more. I'm just little bites at a time. But I'm hyperlinking manufacturer's instructions. I'm bringing in other third-party sources to back up what I'm saying. And I'm also being more specific so that what I said can't be misconstrued as me not knowing what I'm talking about. And I'm trying to really build up steam with the new construction buyers. And, you know, I'm also telling them, hey, tell your neighbors. I've never been a big discount person, but I'm even like, they get an automated Spectora email after their inspection. Hey, tell your neighbor, if they book with us, they get $25 off. We mail you a $25 gift card. So I'm really trying to build up the channels, because those neighbors talk, they have Facebook groups. I run mailers, warranty mailers. I just pick those back up. So another marketing channel that I'm actively doing, it has a decent ROI. I'm hoping to make it better. I had to build the list manually, which sucked, because it's hard to buy that data. I tried to buy the mailing list data, and they're so incomplete, it's useless.
Of new buyers that just bought a new build, or like that bought a build 10 months ago?
If you try to buy that list, you'll pay like $400 for it, and it'll have like 300-ish, 300 to 400 houses, addresses on it, which might sound like a lot, but with the conversion rates of postcards, it doesn't get you much. When I built the list myself, I had 318 for the month of March alone. So I had to go to the, I had to, but this was like something I kind of did in my old job, so it's like second nature to me. I went to the different county assessors websites and I pulled this data. Or if I, you know, in the small towns where they don't have it automated, I called and they sent me an Excel spreadsheet. It took me about 6 to 8 hours to build the list, which needs to have a cost associated with it. It's also incredibly boring. But I will eventually, I'll either pay someone to do that for me, or I'll find a more efficient way. But in the first, so I'm doing like almost like a content mailer campaign. So I put on there like a horribly done detail around some line set for an HVAC system. And I made it kind of humorous. It says like, why waste your money on a home inspection? And then yada, 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 down at the bottom, it says like, too bad the builder didn't waste $40 on this line set flashing to keep water out of your house. And so I've got three different mailers. I'm going to hit each person three times every 2 weeks or so with a different little piece of content from something we've seen. On the first mailing, I got two jobs. So I'm hoping to increase this. I'm also running some retargeting ads through Google for it that haven't kicked in yet. Maybe that'll help. But even just the two, it cost me $274 to mail those. And that was $1,100 worth of work. So
5x-ish.
Yeah, still not great, but I tell you what, it's one of the better returns that I have when it comes to paid efforts.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to figure out how to keep, I'm just going to keep pulling levers with that, you
And
know?
those are and those were 11-month warranty jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, some of those customers will turn into brand advocates for me in the neighborhood. And so the return isn't just the money I got today. It's what's the lifetime value of that customer as a referral partner, especially now that I've incentivized them. We'll see if that works. It's an experiment. Is $25 enough to get people to do anything? I don't know.
I absolutely love how you think about the business, and the metrics and the marketing around it. I could go for another hour with you on this stuff. I think we should definitely do a follow-up, to chat through some of these specifics. 'Cause I'm sure you mentioned you had some, these did not work or some not to-dos.
I have a serial failure. I've had ideas I was so excited about that just flopped so hard. But that's just part of it, I think. You just got to try. You just got to test your assumptions all the time. That's anytime I have an assumption, it's like a challenge. I'm like, wait a minute. I was like, I'm assuming that's the case. So let's go do it anyways and see if I'm right.
That to me is the biggest takeaway from having, chatting with you and gotten to meet you that I think inspectors can take away here is just your testing mentality around, hey, let's go find out. Let's run some tests and pay
Yeah.
attention to the results. And slowing down enough to do that. So,
It's always time. It's frustrating, but that's where you end up finding the opportunities. So.
absolutely. So I'm going to link to your website in the description. If there's inspectors that want to nerd out with you about this stuff, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
I just call or email. Well, actually, email because it'll go. Don't bother my call lady, Patricia. She's great, but I want her taking my sales calls. So just shoot me an email because I don't mind talking to people. I'm approachable. That's the fastest way to get a hold of me.
Cool. Well, I'll link all that. I appreciate you sharing all the knowledge, man. I think like just talking shop gives people good insight and just to how you think about the business, which I believe is fairly unique and sophisticated for our industry. And so kudos to you, man, for making all this work.
Appreciate it. I'm still figuring it out, man. There's guys out here that are killing me on the numbers, I'm sure, but
Hey.
I just my highest priority is not necessarily the most revenue. It's a balancing a lot of different ideas and interests. So
Yeah, seems like you're focused on the right things though. Sustainable, client direct, higher revenue per inspection. I mean, I think that is an efficiency mindset, which I wish more people had. So kudos to you.
thanks.
All right, brother. Appreciate the time, man.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.